Alex.
Elliot, mate, how's it going?
Yeah, good, good. Bit cold, actually, but otherwise, but otherwise good. I think we're going to not talk about the weather. We've got a bunch of stuff to talk about in today's episode. Just a little recap, actually. Last time we recorded a Pulse, I'm pretty sure we were sitting in a convertible by the side of the highway in the US. So,
At a Starbucks. Starbucks car park.
Yes. Yeah. Classy place to record. so this is a little different. So we're both back in Australia and it is winter, hence my feeling cold. M2 Max. Mm-hmm. Have you seen stuff? What are your thoughts?
Of course. It's hard not to see it. And it's obviously hard for us not to talk about it. I feel like you've been definitely teasing getting a Mac. I know what you're talking about, like a Windows machine now and stuff, but definitely saw it. It's the same look and feel as the M1 MacBook that came out last year, right? MacBook Air. So, you know, it's just the M2 chip.
Sort of. Yeah.
Yeah, tell us.
Well, they've changed the form factor a little bit.
It's a bit square now, isn't it?
I'm trying not to cut you off here, Alex, but look, I think, this is the M2 MacBook Air, and I'm pretty sure they also announced an M2 MacBook Pro 13-inch, so those are the two things they announced. I'm pretty sure I'm going to be getting one of the Airs. I've been on the fence. Well, one of the reasons I've been on the fence is trying to work out if I really do need a Pro again, because I've had a Pro now for, I don't know, 5-6 years or something like that, and it's been fantastic, but I don't think I actually take advantage of the added power, except perhaps now that it's still working fine after so many years, and maybe if it wasn't so high spec at the time, you know, when I bought it, it might not still be running that well. But no, there's a lot of things I like about the new Air. I haven't seen it in person, I'm just going on what I've seen online, but I personally prefer the new shape, so the non-wedge shape. I like the fact that it looks a bit more like the Pros. The screen is slightly bigger than it used to be, so I think it's going to be 13.6 inches instead of 13, so, you know, a little bit of an improvement there. MagSafe charging cable, so that's the little magnetic charging cable which I've got on my 2015 MacBook Pro, which I really like. As I've heard other people say, it only takes one time for you to like bump the cable and have it pop out rather than pull the whole computer off the desk that you realize the value of that. And in this case, it also frees up a USB-C port. So that's pretty cool. M2 chip, hopefully, you know, it's actually quite a lot faster. And then I suppose the other thing is that, I mean, Apple is claiming 18 hours of battery, which I don't buy. But even if it's in anywhere near that ballpark, that's just incredible. And I can say from having used my wife's Air, which is now, I don't know, roughly 18 months old, that the battery is ridiculously good. It's like well over 10 hours, I think, which compared to what I've got at the moment is it's very good.
But they don't have the Touch Bar anymore.
That's another thing that's good about it.
How am I supposed to send emojis really quickly if I don't have my Touch Bar? The only fun part. Yeah, look, I actually am getting the M1 Max MacBook Pro 16-inch new laptop for work pretty soon. So looking forward to that. It's not the M2. Actually, they don't have the M2 Max yet. Anyway, it's a new one out. I'm really excited about that. But this is a segment about all things legal tech, legal ops. So let's jump into some capital raisings. Elliot, do you want to tell us about the first one?
I feel like you're moving me along here, Alex.
No, I love talking about Macs. I just realized that for people that don't realize, like, this could just be an Apple podcast, but it's not.
No.
It's legal tech, even though we love talking about Apple.
Yes, right. Okay, legal stuff. Capital raisings. All right, first one we've got here is Dilly Trust. They have raised 130 million euros. Big numbers there. So Dilly Trust, based out of France, and they've got a bunch of products which seem to me to be sort of focused around corporate governance, but they do a lot more than that. In fact, they do a lot. So I had a look on their website and they've got a board portal, an entity management suite, They've got contract lifecycle management, they've got e-discovery, document management, and something called Dilly Trust Governance, which I think is something that kind of sits between all of them and makes them all work together, I think. This is their second funding round. They did one back in 2017, so it's been a while since they did their first one. That's on that 130 million euros that they raised is on 20 million euro turnover in 2021. And they say that that reflects 30% growth on a per annum basis in recent years. So all pretty big numbers and quite general sort of stuff about how they're going to use the money. They're going to accelerate growth, support ongoing innovation, international expansion, et cetera. So, yeah, so there you go. Any thoughts?
Yeah, look, I mean, looking at this, it's like a kind of like a legal ops platform. I mean, whether or not they go super deep in some of these areas, because you've got like board, portal, entity management. So that's kind of like your diligence of the world. You've obviously got CLM, which we don't even need to mention any kind of names there. E-discovery, you got your relativities and other things, document management, NetDocs, iManage. So the question is whether or not it does those kind of aspects as good as those point solutions, but then also balancing that it's all on the same platform. So, I mean, I hadn't come across this organization before, and I was just thinking when we're talking about a company that's got 20 million euro in turnover just last year and is raising 130 million euro, you know, that's not a small company. And I looked into them, and it's predominantly Europe, North America. So I can probably, it makes sense why we haven't seen it a lot in the US, the broader parts of the US, and also kind of in the APAC region. But I mean, when you're looking at those kind of aspects, again, on paper, pretty much sounds like what every in-house team wants. And this isn't a sponsored post, but I was just, you know, curious when you're reading it, like actually it's kind of that platform that kind of covers a lot of things that a lot of company wants. But anyway, they're my thoughts. I haven't seen the platform, you know, I can't comment on it exactly, but on paper it sounds like what people want.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I agree also with your thought there, which is how have we sort of not heard of them? Because I have not heard of them before I saw this. So yes, I agree. Big company, cover a lot of ground. I'm not sure how it hasn't sort of entered my sphere of awareness. So there you go. All right, let's move on. So Evisort has raised 100 million US. Evisort is a contract lifecycle management tool, as we were just mentioning. Heavy sort of AI focus in their marketing, and in particular the ability to extract information from contracts that enter into their platform. This was a Series C round, led by a bunch of investors, TCB and others. Now, they actually raised $35 million in a Series B round about 14 months ago, so shorter cycle time there as compared to Dilly Trust. They've raised a total of $155 million. Again, they say the funds will be spent on things like enhancing the customer experience, investing in the product, which I suppose is enhancing the customer experience, and accelerating their global growth. Interestingly, they've recently hired a bunch of sort of well-known names in the corporate tech space. And I won't mention the particular names because I don't know them, but they've hired people from Workday, DocuSign, who we'll also mention later, and Knowable. I suppose one comment I'll just make is, you know, just yet more sign of more and more money flowing into CLM.
Yeah, look, I agree with that point. And also the kind of investor that kind of injected that $100 million US into Evisort are investor into other kind of tech companies like Airbnb, LinkedIn, and Netflix. And when you look into kind of TCV, they obviously have a very diverse portfolio, but it's just interesting to see an investor like that invest into kind of a legal technology company. And it makes sense because they invest in all kinds of tech. But yeah, I was just curious to kind of see that. But I was also very interested to see that it's so hectic to think that raised $155 million since 2018. Like they were probably prior to their seed round in 2018. But to go from 2018 to now, 2022, and raise $155 million is just, again, reinforcement of just how kind of hot the CLM investment market is. And I say that kind of on purpose because there's been a lot of investments. We're not seeing kind of the fruits of that investment, if that makes sense yet. Like, obviously, we just talked about Evisort there and what they're going to be using that money for. And there's always that very generic kind of enhancing the customer experience and investing in the products and stuff. And that's never really clear as to what that is. So I think we're probably a year or two behind actually seeing some of this money being vested, materialized, customers using it, and then those use stories coming out. But again, very hectic to see them raise this money. Another example of investment into CLAM.
Mm. Well, if we need even more evidence, we should talk about our next one here, which is Sirion Labs, another CLM provider. They've raised $85 million US. This is a Series D round. And again, total raise to date, $146 million. They are going to spend their money on scaling operations, product research and development. So also some more general stuff there. Their founder was also one of the founders of United Lex. So this software grew out of a realization that some of what they were providing as a service via United Lex, they felt they wanted to provide as a platform, as a tech platform as well. One comment I'll make before I hand over to you for comments is that the article I read here was in TechCrunch, which is a sort of a more general tech blog and tech publication. And it's nice to see some sort of legal tech content in a more mainstream publication like that. And interestingly, in the article itself, they noted that, just to sort of come back to the CLM point, that the CLM market is expected to grow from 1.5 billion back in 2019 to 2.9 billion by 2024. So I suppose we're kind of more than halfway through that at the moment. So that's essentially a doubling in 5 years. And, you know, I think that would explain why we're seeing so much money flow into the space.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah, so again, looking into these guys, $146 million since 2014 when they got their seed round, also isn't bad. A bit of a difference there between 2018 and, you know, 2014, but still, obviously, a huge amount of money. But it kind of makes me think more and more. We've talked about Eversaw, now we're talking about Sirion Labs. Like, when are we going to see some kind of consolidation across the market? And what I mean by that is there's just so many options. Mm. And like, when are we actually going to see some clear winners? And like, and I know Gartner have their, what do they call it? The magic quadrant or something like that, where they talk about all the different providers and kind of who's leading the market and so on. But there's still just so many new players on the game that are getting huge amounts of money pumped into them in order to, you know, create, what do they say? Use the money for product research and development, right? So they're kind of building out their product. But like, are we actually going to see it? And the other question, I don't have answers to these, but, you know, when will we, or will we see enterprise tech players play a more prominent role in CLM? Hmm. So, you know, why does an organization have to implement a separate system, a complete separate system to their enterprise or technology stack just to manage contracts, which are just fundamental to a business? Hmm. Like, when are we going to see Microsoft do something in this space? Maybe Microsoft will acquire some of these companies. Maybe they already have, or maybe they're building their own product in the background. But I think there needs to be, like, in the next 5 to 10 years, kind of like some amalgamation. So there's kind of the Salesforce of CLM, or like the Oracle of CLM, or the Workday of CLM. Mm. How long is it going to take? I'm not sure, but it has to happen, right? Like, this, it can't continue like this.
Perhaps it's going to take something like a Microsoft to actually do some of these acquisitions, because these are big organizations in their own right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are others that we've spoken about previously who have raised circa $100 million on $1 billion or close to $1 billion valuations. Mm-hmm. So who's going to be buying that stuff, right? You'd have to have a pretty big war chest to go out and purchase some of those organizations. And yeah, it's going to take, it potentially could take something like a Microsoft to actually do it, unless you've got some of these organizations out there raising that kind of capital in order to go on an acquisition spree. So who knows?
The whole episode, I feel like I'm smelling an episode coming just on that.
On the CLM market, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, so let's move on to something very different here. So this is the title of this article that we read is called In-House Lawyers Moving Away from Word. So the sort of backstory here is that Juro, they sponsored a survey recently of 90 corporate counsel from, and I quote, agile, fast growth companies, and asking them various questions, including about their reported use of Microsoft Word. And of the 90, only 52 of them, which is about 58%, reported that they use Word. Now, this same survey that was conducted a year ago, the equivalent figure was 68%. So it's gone from 68% to 58% in the space of a year. Although I will say, I don't know if it was the same company. So it could be that this could partially reflect the different ways of working across a different group of surveyed participants. But it, you know, it raises the question, do we buy this? Do we think that lawyers are actually moving away from Word. And I mean, just a few comments from me. I think, you know, to some extent, Duro has a kind of a vested interest in looking at it this way, because, you know, they provide tools. I'm not saying they've done anything dodgy here, but they provide tools to help sort of create and manage contracts other than through Word, at least in part. So perhaps that is reflected in their customer base and thus who was surveyed. And, you know, I wonder if what this reflects is a move towards things like Google Docs, for example. You know, the reality is I know of a number of organizations that rely on the Google suite rather than the Microsoft suite. And if that is happening increasingly, then of course there would be a move away from Word. And then I suppose the other thing I'd say is that I do wonder that if this is correct, is this because, you know, younger lawyers are entering the market? And I think historically Word, while it's been an excellent platform to work with documents, particularly where they're heavily formatted and rely very heavily on, you know, tables of contents and cross-referencing and that kind of thing, what Word and the Microsoft suite has not done well or as well historically is collaboration, particularly both within organizations and outside organizations. So I do wonder if perhaps as younger lawyers are entering the market, they have a higher value on that collaboration stuff and those collaboration tools, and that might in part be driving a shift towards other platforms where collaboration has been and is still a higher priority. So, yeah, Alex, thoughts on that?
Yeah, I've got a slightly different flavor to kind of what you're talking about there. And like you said, I think it's important to note that the samples from lawyers that work at kind of start and scale up. So I think that has some kind of bearing on some of these results. But I, you know, just like you started to think, well, why is this the case? Why are we seeing in this kind of data set lawyers using Word less? And, you know, is it because the lawyers in these environments are kind of not walking into an established kind of ways of working? Like, for instance, you're walking into a really established in-house team that has 300 lawyers and they have all their precedents on Word and they all have their workflows within Word and blah, 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 right? Mm. You're going to use Word. Totally makes sense. But if you're a younger lawyer that's going into a startup and they're moving really quickly and there aren't any processes, and all of a sudden you can start to build processes and you're starting to go to different legal tech conferences or start to see on things online and you start to see, oh, wow, actually I can make my life a lot more efficient. Then you start to use those pieces of technology. So I think you're partly right in terms of the younger lawyers, you know, wanting to collaborate potentially more and just have more technology available to them. And maybe because they work in these startups, they're not kind of held down by these legacy processes. But I think the presumption here from this kind of research is that using Word less equals more efficiency, which I just don't know if that's correct as well. And I think what people are doing is having to look at alternatives where Microsoft aren't providing those specific capabilities that they need. And you mentioned the main one, which is collaboration, right? Mm. Like I know that you know, people at work in-house, whether they're using the, or even at a law firm, whether they're using the Microsoft suite or the Google suite, they use kind of those collaboration features internally. So if you have Microsoft, you can use the internal stuff, and if you have Google, it's internal stuff, but you still can't do it externally. And I know that's not Microsoft's fault or Google's fault. I know that's the internal kind of InfoSec rules they have in place. But these are the kind of features that lawyers want. And I understand that Microsoft Word isn't made for lawyers. It's made for the general enterprise. But how long is it going to take until Microsoft goes, actually, you know what? There's probably a big enough market for us to create a specific version of Microsoft, whatever that is, Microsoft Word, whatever that is, for the legal industry. And whether that is just better collaboration, you know, better ways of negotiating with different people or whatever it may be, like how long is it going to take them to do that? And I think as you start to break down like what a legal need is in terms of collaboration, it's actually not a legal need. It's kind of like a business need. Like the reason why lawyers want to collaborate better with their clients and their stakeholders is so that they can get their inputs and move things faster and close deals and so on. So it's kind of not the legal team's problem to solve. It's kind of the enterprise's team to solve. Hmm. I feel like I'm going a bit of a rant here, but it's really just to think about how long is it going to take until Microsoft plug this gap so that lawyers don't have to go to the market, you know, an immature market, you know, if I'm being honest, to kind of fill these gaps. I don't know. They're my thoughts, unstructured.
All right. Good to chat. Thanks, Alex, for the time.
Thanks, mate. Bye.